On this episode of the Tough Juice Podcast, I had none other than my little sis, Renee Montgomery. And we talked about a lot of things. And one thing that we had to dive deep into was her position on social injustice and reform and how she elected to step away from the game, not just anytime, but in the prime of her career to address all these issues. She also talked about the education that she received around her family, her dad, her mom, going to historic Black colleges, and how she wants to be an asset to these historically Black colleges. And also her feelings and her approach on how she felt when Maya Moore stepped away from the game, one of the most decorated basketball players, I don't want to say WNBA players, but just basketball players as a whole, stepped away in the prime of her career to fight social justice reform, and how that created a wave and a trend for a lot of other people in this space, you know, athletes from all different walks of life. This is one you do not want to miss, and I look forward to working with her more down the line as we're all part of More Than the Vote campaign, respectively, doing a lot of things in our respective communities. Tune in to the Tough Juice Podcast on the Himalaya app or wherever you get your pods. First off, how you feeling right now in the midst of everything? I know I always ask you that on every round table, virtual round table that we share, but how you feeling right now?
You know, I'm glad you asked. I thank you for having me, first of all. Family is family. I'm feeling good in a sense of I'm really happy to see that people are uniting. And when I say people are uniting, I think that there's a lot of division that's trying to happen. There's a lot of things where people are trying to divide people, but it's actually doing the opposite. So for me, that's giving me a lot of joy inside.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm glad you said that as well. Like, you know, seeing people from a visual standpoint, like unifying and probably seeing it, you know, corporate folks getting involved, these private institutions. But what would you like to see more of?
I would say these organizations as a whole, the whole league, doing more in a sense of you see a lot of players taking a stance, doing different initiatives. You even saw the Hawks, you know, here in Atlanta, they opened up State Farm Arena. But I would have loved to see the NBA almost make that a thing. Like, hey, to all the NBA teams, we're going to open up all of our NBA arenas for just make it a thing. You know, I know that there's a vote now that's going to happen, but I would love to see the organizations, the leagues take more of an initiative on these things.
And they also talking about the expansion or possible expansion of the WNBA. But before I even go down that path, I have to, you know, one, just salute you, you know, because the stance that you're taking on, you know, justice reform and everything, electing not to play this season. You know, big ups to you for that. And what went into the thought process of doing that?
A lot. So, you know, there was a string of tragedies, you know, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, George Floyd, we all saw the same things. So there's a string of tragedies that sits on your heart. And then when the protests happened, there was this anger, this outrage that I felt the same as everyone else. Like, this is ridiculous. In 2020, you know, it's like everybody's like, this is 2020. Come on now. This is very Rodney King-ish, you know, in a sense of just no regard for human life. And so those things combined, it just really sat on my heart. And I made the decision to sit out.
Yeah. So when you made that decision, did you think that you wasn't get some type of backlash or anything? Because people understand, like, you're in the prime of your career. And you're saying, you know what, like, I want people to really understand what's happening here with this movement where, you know, queens like yourself, you know, Tasha Cloud, you know, people standing for something major and they need to be, you know, recognized for that. I think when Kaepernick initially did it, when he was taking the knee, people like, yeah, that's like he tripping. He should just, you know, stand up and all. But now he's like, yo, he's a hero for doing that. So you're a hero in my eyes already because I have that foresight and I just want to commend you for that. But also, you know, like I think that it's not just as simple as just saying, I'm just going to not play and stand for the social justice. Did more go into that discussion to make that decision?
Definitely. I mean, and thank you for that. I appreciate you saying that. A lot went into it because, again, this is my job. So people have to remember, I stepped away from my job. When you step away from your job, you don't know what it's going to look like when you come back. So that's the first thing that pops in my head. I've been playing basketball since I was 10. And you know that grind, the whole goal of my career, my life has always been chasing a championship. That's just been the thing that I've done since I was 10. So then when I give up this part of my identity, it's like, that's the whole thing. You know, athletes, that's part of our identity. And then lastly, just the people around me that it would affect if there were backlash, because I was, you know, kind of preparing myself for the backlash, because we saw how people were talking about Kyrie when he was mentioning that he might want to sit out. You know, I saw the tweets. So I wanted to kind of talk to my family and friends and kind of prepare them for the backlash that might come too. So there was a lot that went into that decision.
Yeah, it's so many queens just stepping up, as we touched on. And, you know, I want to get your thoughts on, you know, Maya Moore, you know, stepping away from the game of basketball, former teammate of yours, in the height of her career, one of the most decorated, you know, basketball players ever. What was your thoughts when you initially saw her step away from the game, you know, a year plus back?
Yeah, my thoughts were like, wow, mama. Like, you know, like I was just like, wow, in a sense that it's not that it came out of nowhere, but it was like, that is pretty big. You know, I didn't understand at that time. I didn't understand why she couldn't do both. So when people ask me why I can't do both, I understand that question, because I was like, huh, I wonder when she first announced it, I'm like, huh, I wonder why she had to not play to do it. And then now fast forward 2 years after, here I am making the same decision and I get it. You know, she saw what I see now. She saw that something needs to be done, you know, and she knew a particular man that she wanted to do it for. So, I mean, you can't say enough about her. And again, it needs to really be highlighted that she might still go down as the greatest to ever play. And yeah, she stopped. Like, she stopped. And stopping where she stopped, she still very well could be the best player to ever play women's basketball, having stopped midway in her prime. That's a big deal. And I think that it needs to be talked about more. I mean, and not to mention, she got him out of jail. So she had a goal in mind and didn't stop until she completed it. Like, you can't say enough good things about her.
Man, listen, I think that's ultimately, when you look at her resume and people talk about championships, and I think she already have, what, 2, 3? That count
minimum.
That count for 2 right there. That's 2 chips right there for what she sacrificed and did.
Thank you.
Yeah, because people be looking at LeBron. Yeah, LeBron went to Cleveland. They was like, that's 2 championships. I was like, Maya just did? That's a 3-piece.
Very sweet. Like, whatever. Give her her roses. Hall of Fame career. I talk about it all the time, but you have certain special players that are like a Maya Moore, where you see their talent on the court, but then you see it off the court and you're like, wow, so they're just like this amazing human. And it makes me think of a LeBron James, where he started his I Promise School. I mean, a whole school. You know, that you can't say enough for the things they do off the court. So I always want to make sure we're banging that drum for them, because that's, like you said, 3-peat.
How did you get, like, seasoned and aware of, you know, things that's happening in our climate, like in our world? Like, certain people can't pull back the layers and, like, really talk about it from an educational standpoint. Like, who introduced you to, like, this reality?
Yeah, I would say my parents. You know, my parents met at an HBCU at West Virginia State University. So I grew up, and let me tell you also, my mom ended up teaching at that same university for 30 plus years. So I grew up an HBCU baby, in a sense that I knew what homecoming was. It was a whole thing. I knew. See, and this is how I associate homecoming. I knew that we were going to have a lot of guests at the house. I knew that it was going to be busy. I knew that they was going to be in and out. Like, you know, and I associated it with a celebration. Like, homecoming was this big deal. So that started my sense of Black pride. You know, I started to see it everywhere. I'm like, wow, look at them. They was dressed, you know, this is an HBCU homecoming. So I don't know if anybody's seen it, but they were dressed from head to toe at the games, the step show. It was a whole event. So I grew up with this certain level of pride. And when I didn't see it being represented in communities, I think that I started to wonder why. And I would talk to people. So I have a 11-year career of playing overseas in Europe, being in predominantly white schools when I grew up in West Virginia, I have a lot of things that cultured me. And so I take those experiences and I try to think out, why is somebody saying what they're saying? There has to be a reason.
And when you talk about those experiences that you're taking, you visited us on the round table, the NBA round table that I was hosting. And you said that there's certain things that you want to do in the black colleges. What specifically do you want to do?
Okay, so we're talking about championships. I need some help to win my championship, okay? And this is I'm so excited. As people that know athletes, we need goals. So I have a huge goal. Morris Brown College is an HBCU here in Atlanta. And if people don't know, it's the only college founded by a slave, like actually founded by a slave. 20 years ago, their president wasn't great with money, and basically they lost their accreditation. And now, 17 months ago, some alumni came together and they was like, yo, we got to get Morris Brown back to what it used to be. Some people might recognize that school from Drumline. They were in the movie Drumline, but okay. They have a rich tradition. And so basically they had like $3 million in debt. They got that back to zero. They got their accreditation loan. And so they're applying for accreditation. October is like the finals, let's say. And I need to raise a lot of funds so that they can show that they're a sustainable functioning college. So basically you can't get, even if you have the bills to pay exactly what you need to pay, you have to show that you can function still too. So you need to have money in the bank. So I'm going to be doing an initiative called The Last Yard to basically help Morris Brown get that last yard and get their accreditation and basically get back to where they should be, because I believe HBCUs are like the pulse of the black community.
Well, definitely reach out, because I would love to help and participate in that movement. Anything that you're doing, I'm always going to be supportive. You little sis, so know that. What are some of the major takeaways that you're seeing just from the marches and the protesting and everything that you're seeing? What are some of the biggest takeaways you've taken away?
I think the diversity of it. You know, when you, if you start to look at a timeline of sit-ins and go way back, sit-ins and all kinds of different protest activism, you start to see a trend that it was mostly black people, minorities. But now if you start to look at a lot of the different protests all over the world, it's so diversified. It's actually shocking how diversified it is to where it's flipped. Sometimes there's more non-minorities than there are minorities. Like that to me shows the progress. People understand this isn't just a one community problem. This is an everybody problem. And that's what makes this different, I think.
But you know what's crazy to me too is that a lot of people, and I've been getting this a lot because we share a large platform, whether it's CNN or we go on Fox even to talk about the grievances and the history of what we've dealt with for years, all the trauma. People say, you know, like, you're still talking about racism, you're still talking about inequality and all these different things. I told them that racism isn't going to be corrected in this calendar year. And in fact, it might not be corrected in our lifetime. This is hundreds of years of, you know, this unaddressed trauma. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's definitely true. And that's why I tell people this is a long marathon. And I say that to say also there's going to be wins along the way. So people need to understand that, no, we're not going to correct a 400-year-old problem in 6 months. It just, that dynamic doesn't even make sense. However, in those 6 months, Mississippi can change their flag. In those 6 months, the NFL team will change their nickname. In those 6 months, you have universities left and right changing the name of schools, buildings, statues are going down. These are wins. However, we're not at the end goal, but always just the way to stay encouraged is just to look for those wins. But this is a thing that I think Gen Z, that younger generation, they're going to really see the effects of 2020.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you. And, you know, something else I agree with is an essay that you penned in the Players Tribune. What made you write it? And can you tell our viewers and listeners, you know, what it was all about?
Yeah, I think people won't really understand why you do something until they understand your story. And so the reason I say that is because, you know, a lot of people, right when I did the tweet, they're like, huh? like, you know, just their initial response is like, wait, what? You're sending out to do what? And what? And how exactly are you going to prove that you did it for a good reason? What's your ROI, basically, is what people were going to ask me. Like, what is your return on investment if you sit out? And I was like, at first I was confused by that question. I'm like, I don't necessarily need one. I'm doing it because I want to make a change. But then I started to think, like, people want to get why I'm doing it. Like, that was basically the question. Like, why is this important enough that you will quit your job for a year, you know? And so that's kind of how you got to the Players Tribune piece, because I wanted people to understand me as a human, and then they'll understand how I led myself to that decision.
I think that when you went to the extreme of, you know, this is your livelihood at the height of your career, you're in the prime, and you saying that, I'm not doing this because this is more important. I think that's what stuck out to me more than anything, because it's like, no, this is not just a sweep this under a rug situation again. Like, this is a real problem. And I think that a lot of people, even if they haven't even reached out and told you, they're following your lead. Like, they really respect the decision that you made. And, you know, have you got phone calls or people reaching out saying, wow, we really respect you for what you're doing?
So many that I almost get nervous saying people. But so my 12-year-old, he lost it when Grant the Flash, so he's the character the Flash, reached out to me. My 12-year-old, you can't tell no one anything. My dad was pretty shocked when Michael Buffer, the guy that says, let's get rid of the rumba. So he said he's a new, like, I have a new fan in him. So not to mention just the NFL players, Mike Evans reached out, so many NBA players, Dwight, Kyrie. I joined the More Than a Vote campaign with you. So there's so many different, and my W, the ladies of the W, I mean, they showed up and showed out. They all were just kind of like, what's good? We with her. Like, what they kind of like posted up, like, we got you, let us know. So to me, I mean, I was actually nervous about that aspect, and I was overwhelmingly surprised and thankful.
Yeah. Have you been hesitant? And I know you haven't, but, you know, it's just like a really good basketball player, which you are, going out to score. You know, sometimes you get goosebumps. Sometimes you get a little nervous when you're in the moment. What was your emotions like coming out on a national platform? I saw you on CNN talking. I see you on all these national platforms talking and speaking just, you know, so polished and to the point. Are you nervous when you go on these platforms and speaking real, like, resolve?
I actually get excited, and it's probably a little wacky, but I've been thinking that people need to hear a positive silver lining. I think that hope is, like, Obama won his whole campaign on hope, you know, like the Yes We Can slogan. He literally won on hope, because people need hope. If you keep preaching that it's so bad, it's never going to get fixed, it's never going to happen, people are like, well, then what are we even doing then? You know, people will start to get that, if it's never going to get fixed, what are we doing? So I get excited that people need to see how excited I am about what's going on, and hopefully it'll make them excited, because I'm energized. You know, I'm doing a lot. But, and people are always like, hey, are you okay? You might need to slow down. I'm like, yo, I just talked to 200 college students at Georgia Tech, and they're like ready to figure out how they can change the world. No, I'm not tired. So I don't know, I just get excited about these kind of situations.
Me too. I got to share the story with you. So I'm back here, and I got the lieutenant governor at my house. I got the governor. I got the mayor, the chief, and I'm sitting back. Check it out, though. So, you know, we come from the hood, man. We come from the block. But to be able to have, one, a platform, and to have all these elected individuals seeking your information and your guidance on a real issue, it was just like, wow. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Did you have that moment yet? Like, because I've had that moment, and I was like, yo, this is crazy, but it's... We need that type of inclusion. What, like,
it is crazy. And the reason it's crazy, it's not crazy because you belong in that room with them. Let me tell you that you belong. The reason that they're seeking you out is because now you're an expert in a field that they need to know about. You're an expert at being Black. You're an expert at being in a community where the policing may not represent the community. So you're an expert in the things they need to know about. So it's not crazy in that aspect. it's crazy to us because we've never been invited to that room before, you know? So that's what's really crazy. So to me, I had that exact same feeling. I'm like, wait, Joy Reid wants to talk to me about what now? Like, you know, like MSNBC's calling me, you know, it's different if ESPN's calling me, MSNBC is calling me. So yeah, absolutely. I had that same feeling, but you know, I think there's a reason that you probably thrive in that setting, because it's something that we know. Being Black, I've done it my whole life. I think I can talk about it.
Absolutely. An expert in that space. And look, it's so amazing just to see real, authentic people rise when real stuff is happening, because so many times I've seen social media and these trends and the ignorance of a lot of things, and to see real substance and people that's well-rounded and educated be highlighted like you have been, you know, I love it. I love it. And that's why I over-support it, because we need
And that's real. Let me say something else too, because you said it here just now, like, and this is family, whatever sis needs, she got it. He actually means it. So I actually recently hit him up and I'm like, yo, can you shoot me a video real quick? I'm hosting the gala for the Over Under Initiative. And he's like, yeah, what you need, you know? And not only that, so that's phase one. When he sends the video, it's about playgrounds, and he went out to a court, filmed it there, just the whole setting, like took it a step further. So I appreciate you. I wanted to salute you and thank you, because a lot of people might say, yo, what you need? Then when you say what you need, they're like, I ain't gonna be able to do it. You know, but you were just like, yo, what you need? All right, what do you need? Okay, what do you need? Okay, got you. And it was just like done. And then you went above and beyond. So I appreciate you for that.
Thank you, sis. Hey, that's how it's supposed to be though.
I appreciate, I would give you that effort. So it was nice to see that, like, you gave me that same energy that I would give you. So that I always want to thank you out loud, because I already thanked you via text, but I want to thank you out loud. So I appreciate that.
Thanks, Queen. And hey, that's the type of treatment you get when you go to the University of Connecticut.
You better know it.
Hey, a few more questions for you. I was thinking about something that I saw on social media that was trending, and Sandra Bland. And I saw the 7-year anniversary of BLM, the Black Lives Matter movement. When that whole initiative happened and took place, what was your thoughts initially? And did you see it coming to this? Because they've been parachuting like a lot of information in, you know, whether it's via TikTok or whatever, and got a lot of young people engaged on the front line, just wanting to know about, you know, their culture, their history and everything. And it's actually working.
It has. And, you know, in 2016, my Minnesota Lynx team, we probably were the first people to kind of do the shirts. And, you know, we had Change in Unity on the front of our shirts, and on the back of our shirts, we had Black Lives Matter. And we also knew that that might not be received well, because at that time it was still a very new concept. So we actually put a police shield on the back of our jersey too, you know, just to make sure people understood it's not about the police. It's not about, you know, this is about, yeah, we was trying to make sure they understood we're not excluding anyone. It didn't go over well. Long story short, it didn't go over well. The police department that were policing our games and protecting us during the games, they walked out on us. They didn't want to support us any longer. So yeah, so in 2016, that was the climate for us writing Black Lives Matter on our shirts. People couldn't understand what is this about? Like, what are you saying? People wanted, fans were torn. They were reaching out to us, writing fan letters like, we love you girls. Why would you do that? Like, we have people in the military. Now we feel like we have to choose between you and America. And we were like, no, that's not it. You know, we received a lot of backlash, and I have to commend Glenn Taylor, Coach Cheryl Reeve. They stood tough with us, you know, because it's easy to stand behind players right now. You know, Black Lives Matter, if you're not saying Black Lives Matter, it's almost the bad part. But back then, when the cops walked out on us, and our team owner, our team coach, they were still like, you know what, you guys did the right thing. Don't worry about it. And we were like, okay, cool. You know, but that was not an accepted thing. Black Lives Matter was not accepted in 2016 like it is in 2020.
And it's crazy, because to piggyback on what you just said, it's not saying that Black lives are better. Black lives are more. We just said this shit matters. Like, and everybody's getting so offensive with just that discussion, which is crazy to me. It just
I'm confused, and I wrote actually an open letter, and I addressed that. I said, you know, I'm pretty sure that when the founders of Black Lives Matter, and it was a Black female, when she founded Black Lives Matter, I don't think she thought she had to add the word T-O-O at the end of it. You know, I think she thought it was understood that because of our history in America, that it's understood that other lives matter. We want you to understand that Black Lives Matter. Like, that's what we need you to understand. That's the topic. That's the main issue. And so it's been taken on this ride. And so now I always tell people, look, my mom was involved in things, activism things, my dad as well. They didn't have hashtags. So if you can understand that the hashtag is just a hashtag, the movement is the movement. The movement is about equality, civil rights, equity. If you can just understand those and leave these words, the capital B, the capital L, the capital M, that means something different. Everybody calm down. The movement is we need rights. We need equality. We need representation in the workplace. That's all that matters. Leave the hashtag alone. Leave the discussion about the hashtag alone. It's the movement.
100%. And, you know, last two questions for me. You know, something that's been in the news heavy is Senator Loeffler. And I don't want to go deep into it, but what's your thoughts on everything and your position? And have you reached out, or did she reach out, or anything?
Yeah, so I reached out, and I wrote an open letter. And so the reason a lot of people are like, well, Rob, write an open letter. First of all, I like writing things because I like to think out my thoughts and write them out so that they can't be taken wrong. So when I write it and I'm writing my exact thoughts and you can read it on paper, this is how I feel. So I wrote a letter to Senator Loeffler addressing her stance on Black Lives Matter, because the backstory is she wrote the WNBA commissioner a letter saying she opposes the WNBA infusing Black Lives Matter into any of their marketing, any of their planning. And so I know that Senator Loeffler's thoughts are a lot of people in America's thoughts. She's not just the one individual that thinks that. There's a lot of people that feel the exact same way she does. So I just decided to write a letter to address that thing, that exact thing. It's about a movement. I talked about in 1919, she and I would have been the same. We would have been the exact same, locked in arms, like, we want to vote too. You know, 1920 was when the women's suffrage, when women were allowed the right to vote. So at that point, we would have been like on the same lines. This is the exact same thing, but a racial inequality in a sense of representation, equality, equity, anything you want to talk about. So we are the same. And I said, I understand you have an election. You're a Republican. You have to appeal to your base. But there's a history. There's the election, and then there's history. So this is bigger than a lot of people know. I think that this time will really define a lot of people's lives. And where do you want to fall in history is basically my question.
Yeah, and I felt that way too. Like, now isn't the time to be politically correct. Now is to stand on the right side of justice. And all the left wing, white, right wing, in the middle, the liberal, this, all that's out the window. It's just right and wrong. And if you stand on the wrong side, you know, you will be, you know, talked about and observed, you know, throughout the course of history when people go down that path. And speaking of history, last question for me, your legacy. What would you want the legacy to be when you think and look back at it? Because let me just tell you, more than an athlete, you're definitely beyond and doing that. But what would you want your legacy to be and be remembered for?
Yeah, that, you know, and for me, a lot of people know this, like Coach Reed, Coach Ayema, you know, people started asking my coaches, like, what do you know about Renee before this? And all of my coaches kind of were like, I'm not surprised at all that Renee's doing this. Why are you guys? And to me, that was like the biggest compliment ever, you know, that you have these coaches saying like, they're not surprised at what I did. And the reason I think they're saying that is because I've kind of been one way my whole career. I've been a captain on a lot of my teams for a certain reason. I carry myself a certain way. I take pride in presenting myself being a professional. I take pride in being on time. I take pride on how I treat people. You know, I don't care if it's a reporter that's writing for a magazine that has one subscriber or if I'm on MSNBC, you would never know the difference if you watch the tape because I just don't think that matters. So I would hope that my legacy would be something surrounded by how I treated people, how I interacted with people, because that to me is what I take pride in.
I love it, sis. Thanks for coming on my platform. Thanks for joining my show and, you know, keep inspiring, keep raising the bar. We're proud of you.
I appreciate it. Yo, we got to do something at UConn together.
Yeah, I'm telling you, come on now.
We got to do something.
I'll be there. You know, I'm going to be practicing social distancing on the campus, but we got to open this hotel, but I'll be out.
All right.
Done.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, love.